Inspiration Move podcast. My name is Zoe, and it is, what time is it? It is 9:56 p.m. Kids are asleep, and I am in the office getting some stuff done before I try to get some semblance of an early night. This week, so I've spent the last couple of days just trying to motor through, you know, to-do lists and email inboxes, and I'm winning the battle. I'm not sure if I've won the war yet. So today I thought I would talk a little bit about what is the best thing to do when you reach an endpoint, whether that is sort of an endpoint like I had recently where I was too sick to run the half, and then as some of you might have seen in a video I was talking about, it's kind of like, well, what do you do after that? You know, I've got a decent amount of time between now and the next thing, and it's really easy to kind of float and feel a bit lost. And it's kind of the same as when, ironically, it's kind of the same as when you actually do the big thing, whether that's, you know, complete your 3-month goal, or whether that is run your race or finish your marathon, or, you know, whatever it is. There's this kind of bit where you're kind of at a loss as what to do next, and it can, sort of commonly known as the come down after an event, if you did actually get to an event. But it's really, really easy to feel at a loose end if you've been sick and you're not sure where to start. So I think the first thing that you want to focus on is, on the one hand, if you have completed your event, you want to spend time really enjoying that and not be in such a rush to get to the next thing that you don't even take time to appreciate what you did do. And you usually have time to appreciate it, because if you've just run a marathon or a half marathon or a 10-kilometer race or whatever it is, you're going to need some recovery time. And generally, I mean, you wouldn't go this whole time without running by any stretch of the imagination, but generally I like to think of it as you need like a day of recovery for every kilometre you ran. Now, that usually with a marathon I would run after 5 days, but I would not expect myself to be at full energy levels for 6 weeks. And at first, when I first sort of came across this idea, I was like, there's no way, you know, you recover way more quickly than that, but you really don't. So it's sort of about looking at what you are going to be doing in terms of taking it easy, but also getting back into your routine for however long of a period of time that is. So it can be quite short period of time if it was a 5 or a 10k, but if you're looking at a longer distance and you're looking at a high intensity effort, then it is going to take a lot longer. Whereas if you have quite a decent amount of distance volume in your training and you go out and you run a half marathon or something at a relaxed pace, then yeah, you're not going to need as much recovery as an effort at 100%, but it's still good to be aware of. Conversely, I think that if you've had a disappointment or a setback, it's okay to actually feel that disappointment or setback and allow yourself to feel how you feel about it. And, you know, to other people, they might not necessarily get why you're so disappointed, particularly if they're sort of from outside the unique subculture that is running, but that's okay, because, you know, a lot of work goes into anyone's running or anyone's training, and it is really natural to be disappointed if that sort of work goes unexpressed in some way. So although I don't think that wallowing in it forever is a good idea, a little bit of wallowing is what I'm saying is okay. You know, I mean, chances are, if there's been a setback of some kind because of an injury or a sickness, you've got a little bit of time to wallow, and you can allow yourself to feel it. And that feeling is going to propel you forward the next time you think, you can go, oh, I don't know if I want to go for a run today, or I don't know if I can push that little bit harder on this quality session, or whatever it is. It is going to remind you that, you know, that there aren't things that you should be taking for granted, and that you should take all of your opportunities and make the most of them when you get them, because there are no guarantees about what you're going to be able to do in the future, and there's no such thing as a perfect training cycle. But there are a million ways to improve on training cycle. So you take all of that information and you put it into the next thing. Or at least that's what I do as a highly structured, highly planned person. So when I was thinking about what I wanted to do, you know, I could have easily sort of written myself a plan for in between now and Surf Coast and Gold Coast, and sort of looked at, you know, just focusing on those events. But what I really felt, what I really wanted to do was actually run the half marathon that I didn't get to run, not at work. Obviously, I'm not going to drive 3 hours when there's not an event on. But as I was saying the other week, you can run half marathon anytime you want, and I will just treat it as one of my long runs. So I was looking at what I'd been doing with my training, and I kind of figured that other than the whole annoying getting sick part, everything was going really well. And so I'd had about a week off of running. So, or was it 2 weeks? It was a week off running, and then it was the better part of a week of easy running. So it was only 1 week off, but it felt like more like two. So I decided to go back 2 weeks and just repeat the last 2 weeks of my cycle, and then I will go and run a half marathon distance, not this weekend but next weekend, and just see where I'm at. And I'm sort of planning on, you know, not 100% effort, but, you know, like a 90% effort, so, you know, a hard effort, but just as a gauge, it's going to help me figure out what my pacing should be for Gold Coast and give me a much better idea of where my body's at, and then it'll all just nicely close that chapter on my training cycle for me. And generally, if you've had a setback of some kind, or an injury or a sickness, it is a good idea, if you've had, say, a week off, to go back to where you were like probably a couple of weeks ago. So that's sort of how detraining works. I mean, you can have 2 weeks off and you're not really going to lose any fitness. It only really starts kicking in about 3 weeks. So up until that point, you can pretty much pick up where you feel comfortable to do so. But probably in my situation, particularly because I'm still, like, this cold is just hanging on. Like, I feel fine. It's mostly my voice sounds really crappy, which is great for podcasts. But the general rule of thumb is that you go back to where you were a week before your sickness or your injury or your stumbling block or whatever it was happened. And I think probably the best way to prevent, well, you know, everyone has a bit of a come down after a big event. I don't think that you can really prevent that, but you can kind of minimize it a little bit, in that you never ever have just one goal ever, because then you kind of get there and go, okay, well, I did that and now I've got nothing to do. And then, you know, all of a sudden a few months later, you haven't been for a run in 3 months and you've lost a lot of fitness, and it's kind of can be challenging to get back out there again. And a lot of it just comes down to a continual process of goal setting. So if you are always in a process of setting 4 week goals and 2 month goals and 6 month goals, then you're revisiting and creating new goals every month or so, then you're never going to get to a situation where you achieve something and then you don't have anything to do, because there's always something that is coming after that. And that's really going to help to minimize that kind of thing of where something finishes and then you float around and you don't know what to do with yourself. And I think it's great to have kind of what I would like to think of as multifaceted goals rather than, you know, like if all of your goals are in one kind of area, like getting faster over this distance and hitting this pace for this workout or this PB or whatever, that's great and it's highly motivating. And as someone who just managed to very, very barely get out a 7-minute mile in my workout, there is no way I could have done it any faster than what I did. Those time goals are fantastic for really pushing the envelope on your workouts and they are really motivating and that's great. But exactly the same thing happens if you hit a patch of some kind of stumbling block where for whatever reason you aren't improving. And there could be a million reasons why that might happen. You might not have as much time for running in your week and you're going to potentially not advance as quickly as you would normally. Or you might be managing, like coming back from an injury. There have certainly been times when I haven't realized it, but my anemia has crept back in, and so I'll be running along and everything feels like it's like I'm running through quicksand, and that takes a while to recover from, so that could be happening. You know, a whole range of things, like once summer happens, everyone gets slower in summer, you know. So you need to have things that are sort of essentially in different domains. Otherwise, when one thing isn't panning out, you're going to lose motivation for everything. So basically, lots of eggs, lots of baskets is what I'm saying with goals. You might have some goals to be able to go and have a great social run and really be able to enjoy it. You're going to have other ones that are probably to do with times and PBs, and that's also fantastic. You can also have goals for your running, and you can have goals for the other activities that you do. Like I do CrossFit, so I usually have sort of some benchmarks for that, which is always fun. And sometimes for me, my goals are as simple as there is this hill on my route that I always have to run up, and you know, like sometimes it feels easier than others, and that's a good day because it's just that is sort of part of my regular routine. So to find those things starting to get easier, even when maybe other things aren't going quite as well as they could, it just gives you that much more balanced perspective to be able to look at everything you're doing sort of in context rather than zeroing in on one thing, which definitely has its place. But if that's all you are focused on, then it's really easy to get a bit down on yourself when it's not working out as you think it's going to. So my training this week, as I've already talked about, was really, I'm just at the stage of repeating my taper and going through. It's interesting doing the same workouts again and trying to not get locked into like having to do them faster or anything like that. But it is an interesting process because I don't usually repeat workouts that close together, and for that reason. But it has been a really interesting experience, and just being able to see exactly how much more is in the tank after you've had a full taper. Like, it's easy to ignore it and just think, oh yeah, you know, I don't feel that much different, I don't feel that much more rested, my muscles don't feel that much more fresh. And then you go for a run and you're like, yep, they're a lot better than what they were. So it's been a great experience in that way, in just really showing me how much all of that recovery does in terms of the performance improvements. And that is sort of interesting too, because in terms of the one thing that I was reading this week that I found really fascinating, which I will link up, is I was reading, it was, I think it was on Runner's World, and it was they did this whole survey on people, runners who BQ, which is Boston qualify, versus runners who don't qualify for Boston. And it's basically just an amalgamation of a whole lot of data. So all of the people that they're looking at, they're not even all people who are trying to qualify for Boston. It's just they created a great pool of data. And a lot of the stuff is things that you'd expect. Like the people who do qualify for Boston are running a lot more kilometres through the week. They're running a lot more often. So I think that they were averaging like 6 point something or other runs per week. So quite a lot. And they were all things that you'd expect. But the interesting part was they got to how often, like what percentage of their training was devoted to race-specific paced workouts. And the people who actually qualified for Boston had only run at race pace maybe 15% of the time, whereas people who didn't qualify had run at race pace about 50% of the time, which I think is just proves, I think, that there's so much value in running the vast majority of your running at a slow pace, which people hate because there's you have to sacrifice a little bit of ego to do that, to run slow when you know that you can go faster, but you also know that it's not going to really benefit your training, and so you just like keep going at your relaxed pace. Which also then sort of got me thinking about the whole like qualifying for Boston. Like I mean it's so fast. Like even because it goes on age, and I think for my age I would have to run like a 3 hour and 40 minute marathon, which would be an improvement of 28 minutes. So you know, for most people it's a pretty impossible thing. And I guess because I have been catching up recently on the Run Selfie Repeat podcast, which you should definitely check out, it's a great one, and so a lot of it has been going through her journey with attempting to qualify for Boston. And the other week I was listening to one where she was talking about having that moment before she even attempted anything, where she was at, she had been a spectator at Boston, and where it had kind of dawned on her that, you know, she just didn't believe that she could do it, and why did she have that belief. And it sort of tweaked with me, because not in terms of Boston, because I really do love the half marathon as a distance. And, you know, I think that I would definitely run marathons again, but probably more as a social run or a scenic run, and probably not as a four-time, you know, or PB type run. You go, yeah, I'll just run a social marathon, but it's a thing. It could happen. So I've always had this thing about, in 2014, I think, I ran my fastest half, which was like 1:49 and 48 seconds. And since then, because I trained really, that was during a period of quite tough training, and I ran it as hard as a person was capable of running it, and I finished it knowing that there was absolutely nothing left in the tank. Ever since then, I've had this belief that that is absolutely as fast as I could ever go, and I could never ever go any faster than that. And so when I was listening to that podcast about self-belief and how it affects things, I have been thinking about that too, and thinking, you know, why do I believe that? You know, like I have recently, because I have had a workout that I've now done twice, and part of it was to run a fast mile at the end, I've now taken about 38 seconds, I think, off the mile. So there is no reason why I couldn't look at that and go, okay, so fitness has definitely improved since what it was back then. So there is no technical reason why I couldn't run it faster than that. But I think just deep down, I somehow think it was a fluke, which is insane. But it's sort of like it was just so much faster than I could ever conceive of myself running that. And I also think because it was such a red line effort, and I think at a certain point your body is like, we're never doing that again, you know. And it's probably, and even with sort of like going back to the Gold Coast, I'm like, yeah, like I don't know if I wanted to hurt that much. But I think that it is, it's definitely something that I'm going to be thinking about and considering, you know, like if that self-belief is something that I really want to challenge, because I don't, like, now that I'm thinking about it, I don't really think it's based on anything real. I think it's just sort of like a perception that I have about myself that just hasn't really been challenged. And something new that I'm trying out this week, which isn't at all running related, but I've had so many incarnations of, you know, to-do lists and everything like that. And I've gotten it down from, I don't really have to-do lists anymore. I have priority lists because that helps me to not be overwhelmed. So I'll look at it and I'll just number what the priorities are and when things need to get done. But what I did this week, which was really helpful, is I looked at that and it was so overwhelming, even with having numbered everything. I'm like, I'm going to have to do something with that. So I just marked out my week and I put everything into, you know, 1 hour slots on all the various days, and sort of, you know, so I put in, you know, like when I was going to be going for a run, when I was going to be answering emails, when I was going to be writing training plans, you know, when I was going to be recording the podcast, which I didn't put down 10 o'clock at night, but, you know, because things happen and things have to get moved around and some things take longer than others. So it's not completely inflexible in that way, but it did really help to keep me focused through the week. So if you are someone who has a lot of competing priorities, like most of us do, no matter what it is that you do, then that might be something to consider. I think it is something that I will continue to do next week. Like this week was a bit crazy. I don't think any amount of scheduling would have helped me out there. But I think that especially with working from home, having like a bit more focus in that area can only be a good thing. So I am going to stop recording before my voice gets even more croaky, and I will be speaking to you next week. And as always, any questions at all, just drop me an email and, you know, I will attempt to fish it out of the... It depends, like sometimes email is sort of regular but steady, and then sometimes it's just a barrage. So depending on... I try to get to everything within a couple of days, but depending on what's going on with my inbox, sometimes it takes longer. So sometimes it is quicker to just tag me in the community group on Facebook, because yeah, my email efficiency is still a work in progress. But I will speak to you guys next week. Bye.